So I started looking into it, just curious. I'm the guy that walks around looking for problems to solve. That's just my nature. And so I started asking questions and then learning a little bit about the dynamics with barter and how that affects golf course economics. And I really studied that really closely. And then I studied the user experience that was out there for different types of tee time providers. And I thought I could probably create something that was better for golf courses. And that's what GolfPay is to this point. And essentially, GolfPay modernizes how golfers do business with golf courses. They can communicate, they can book a tee time, they can check in, they can buy items out of the pro shop, they can have a regular full experience from end to end, anything they want to do business with respect to the course. And you can do it in a lot of different channels. So we created a system called a golf communication omni platform. And what it allows golfers to do is to be able to choose how they want to do business, whether it's through text message or online, which is the most typical. They can call in. So there's a lot of different channels that allows golfers to do business their way.
Welcome to the Bod Golf Podcast, where we speak with the influencers, disruptors, entrepreneurs, and innovators who are shaping the future of golf. If you're a regular listener, welcome back. If you're new to the Mod Golf Podcast, thank you for joining us, and please subscribe, rate, and review the show on either iTunes or our show page at mod.golf so that you'll never miss the latest engaging story with my amazing guests. If you'd like to receive our monthly newsletter, please sign up on the Mod Golf Podcast website to receive the latest news relating to the innovative future of golf. I'm your host, Colin Weston, and today my guest is Dale Merritt, founder and CEO of GolfPay. Dale is a serial entrepreneur who has found opportunities in some of the most competitive but lucrative industries. Dale has a passion for startups, getting initial traction, and then applying his experience to ramp them up quickly. Dale has built up and sold 6 companies during that time, diversified across many industries, including residential security, solar companies, and even a fixed wireless internet company. Dale's current venture in the golf industry is providing mobile marketing for golfers. His company, GolfPay, combines his obsession for golf and love for startups. So with that, Dale, hey, thanks so much for joining us today, and welcome to the Mod Golf Podcast.
Hey, good morning, Colin. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thanks. So, Dale, I have to thank you. As an entrepreneur and as a business person who's very busy, you have been very patient for us to get together here. You and I met each other about a year and a half ago, I guess, through LinkedIn back and forth. I met each other twice at the PGA show, and the planets hadn't quite aligned for us to get together for this conversation, but now the time is finally come. So thanks for taking the time and persevering and tolerating that it's taken us so long to get together here.
Yeah, no problem. I'm looking forward to it. Thank you.
Good stuff. So, Dale, hey, to start us off here for our audience, can you tell us a bit about yourself personally and professionally, your entrepreneurial backstory? And once you do that, I'd love you to tell us your first ever golf experience too.
Sure. So I guess I'd give you some of my business backgrounds. I start my first company I ever started was a little landscape company when I was 19 years old. Really just a way to generate a little bit of money for me and my friends to party with, quite honestly, yeah. Beer money. So that was something that kind of took off even faster than I really wanted it to. You know, I was more into not working a business, but just, you know, having fun. So as we grew, the headaches grew with it. And eventually I just sold it off to somebody and then moved on. But then I got back into the business environment in the mid 80s and ended up taking over a company that was failing in Phoenix, Arizona. And never had really run a company other than that landscapes company when I was young. And I was actually found out I was really good at turnaround situations. We turned a failing company into a very, very successful company that eventually went public. From there, I really took that experience and I applied it to a lot of different businesses that I started since. I probably started 12 or 14 different companies over the years, maybe even a few more than that, and mostly successful and sold out probably at least half of those companies. And just have always been really entrepreneurial in nature. My dad was the same. He was very successful. And I guess I got a few of his genes and things have worked out pretty good.
Nice. So it sounds like you have been an entrepreneur all your life. So I guess on the flip side of that, it sounds like to get a regular 9-to-5 job, you're kind of like me. You're pretty much unemployable anyway. So entrepreneurship is your only option, isn't it?
Well, I mean, you know, from the standpoint, I mean, I've worked for companies and sometimes in order to learn what you need to learn, it's always best to try to figure it out from the ground up. So, but yeah, typically I work 70, 80 hours a week when I'm getting a business off the ground, and I have a lot of energy And so it's kind of hard to keep that contained and working for somebody.
I agree. I was joking there, of course, but I and myself as an architect in my previous life, I've certainly worked for, I'm going to show my age here, over 20 years in the architectural profession. And that really set the foundation, the groundwork for all the entrepreneurial things that we do with our business also. Without question, you need that foundation and that structure to help inform you to do those things that you're doing, including golf pay, which we're going to talk about in a minute. But I did ask two questions at once there, so I'll get you to answer the second part here with this. So yeah. Yeah. Tell us about the first time you ever picked up a golf club and what that experience was like and how old you were.
Oh, sure. So this was in the mid 80s, too. In fact, it was around the same time that I took over that company I mentioned earlier. So the guy that owned the company invited me to play golf. I had never played golf before. So we went out and I think it was like the third or fourth hole. I ended up shooting a birdie. Probably the whole round I shot at least 125 or 130. I mean, maybe even higher. I don't even remember at this point, but I just remember that birdie. Euphoric recall is a very powerful thing, and I just found it really, really cool. And then from there, I became obsessed to the extent that I had the time to do it. That was really my outlet.
I love that story, the fact that that's such a golfer's memory. The fact you shot, like you said, about 130, but you remember that birdie. You remember it to this day. So yeah, it sounds like you had a great first golf experience and that kind of gave you the bug and that hooked you for life as a golfer. So of course, now with Golf Pay, you've combined your love for golf and your love for entrepreneurship. So I want you to tell us about the passion you have for Golf Pay. First, tell us what Golf Pay is. And I love to hear as an entrepreneur, tell us what that aha moment was, what the pain points you saw in the industry that inspired you to see that business opportunity to Golf Pay and what opportunity you are seizing with it.
Yeah, so, you know, it was kind of interesting how it all came about. I just sold two different companies in the solar business. Really, I was doing a lot of golfing. That's usually what I would do in between selling a company and starting something new. I take that time to really try to figure out what I want to do and then golf a lot. You know, I never had a golf lesson. I shot probably low 80s, mid 80s, maybe every once in a while high 70s. But I never had a golf lesson. So I said, well, let's go ahead and try it. You know, I got plenty of time, nothing to do. So I took a golf lesson and paid this guy for a package of lessons. And actually, things were going pretty well. He was trying to have me remember a lot of different things. So I had to practice a lot. And all of a sudden, about halfway through the lessons, he took off on me. I don't know what happened to him, but he stopped answering his phone. So maybe he got tired of teaching me. But anyway, so I was kind of left in the cold in a way with this new system. So I was trying to stay with it. And I just spent so much time at the golf course. And a buddy of mine, he used to book on Golf Now. And at the time, I heard of Golf Now, but that's it. So this was like probably 2013, 14. I'd heard about Golf Now, but I never booked through Golf Now anyway. So he says, they got these great deals. Just let me know when you want to play. So went and booked, and we showed up at the pro shop. When we let him know that we had paid for one of these hot deals, I noticed the tone and tenor changed of the pro shop person behind the desk. Clearly was not something that they were really excited about. So I couldn't figure that out. So I figured, you know, Golf Now, they probably bought a lot of different bookings to golf courses. Why would they not want that? But I started looking into it, just curious. I'm the guy that walks around looking for problems to solve. That's just my nature. And so I started asking questions and then learning a little bit about the dynamics with barter and how that affects golf course economics.
Right.
And I really studied that really closely. And then I studied the user experience that was out there for different types of tee time providers. And I thought I could probably create something that was better for golf courses. And that's what Golf Pay is to this point. So we just came out with version 2. And essentially, Golf Pay modernizes how golfers do business with golf courses. They can communicate. They can book a tee time. They can check in. They can buy items out of the pro shop. They can have a regular full experience from end to end, anything they want to do business with respect to the course. And you can do it in a lot of different channels. So we've created a system. It's called a golf communication omni platform. And what it allows golfers to do is to be able to choose how they want to do business, whether it's through text message or online, which is the most typical. They can call in and so forth. So there's a lot of different channels that allows golfers to do business their way.
Got it. So just to back up for our listeners, if they don't understand the term omni-channel, why don't you touched on that. Why don't you define that again for them?
Well, omnichannel is where you have one login, but you can do business in many different channels. So no matter where I come from, the system will always know who I am, what my rate should be, and any other personal information that's relevant to the communication. So omnichannel, in our particular case, a golfer can do business, everything that they want to do from a phone call, through text message, through Facebook Messenger, through web chat, and also online. So omnichannel just means one login and many options.
And all your information comes with you, I take it then too.
Yes. Wherever you go across channel, it follows you.
Because that is such a huge pain point across every single industry. And you've obviously seen this. So for example, we're right now renegotiating our mortgage for our house for the bank we've used for the last 20 years. And it's like we're starting from zero every single time. It's like, how do you not have even yourself all this information in your database? And it seems like with an omnichannel that it takes care of all that, that you're already through the onboarding in a lot of cases. And I guess, well, I want you to touch on this with customer experience, because I know you really like to dig into the mindset of the modern consumer. It builds trust also and comfort for people too. And also the fact you feel recognized and appreciated, the fact that information is already there rather than starting asking what your first name is and going from there.
Right. So, you know, our platform, we refer to it here as a direct booking platform.
Right.
It's to encourage that relationship, that direct relationship between the golfer and the golf course, and help to cultivate increased touch points to be able to make the experience better, and also to create opportunities for the golf course to let them know what the golfer would like. It kind of becomes a two-way street and just creates a better engagement in relationship.
Got it. So maybe you could expand on this a little bit, because I've had other guests that have talked about online booking too. And I'll be honest, I don't know that side of the industry all that well, but it came aware to me, or was revealed that, and you touched on this, that most of the golf courses do not benefit or don't like it. Don't like a Golf Now or some of the other ones out there, not to bash on Golf Now here, but the fact they don't financially benefit because they're selling them for the lowest prices. So how does the golf course benefit even more from Golf Picks? It sounds like you're looking to solve pain points for the golf course owners, the management, and also for the consumer.
I think we have an amazing technology. We filed patents on it to protect it, protect that space of that direct booking space for the golf course. One of the pain points that we saw was that the third parties, they basically own the data as well, and they end up marketing to the same data.
Right.
So your competitors aren't just the golf course across the street, but it's actually your third parties are competing. In our particular case, we're not a tee time provider. We provide technology to golf courses to make marketing tee times easier, kind of a set it and forget it type thing. All they need to do is promote the different conveniences that is embedded in Golf Pay. And we do that through different digital assets that we supply the golf course and actually configure and install for them. So they really don't need to do anything. And then the golfers become more in tune with that way of doing business because it's frictionless. It's doing it their way. They can do anything that they want to do from end to end. That actually is going to get that golfer to come back and book direct more often versus being attracted to the discount. There's always going to be those discount seekers. That's always going to be the case. That'll never change. But a lot of times we're diverting the attention of someone that's willing to pay the full green fees to a hot deal just because it's right in their face. I mean, if you have a choice and you get a hot deal or call into the golf course, let's say a non-golf pay golf course, to get a rate there, you do a Google search, you see, oh, there's a hot deal in this little ad over here, same golf course, I'm going to go there. So you're always going to have that problem until the golf course gets control over all of that customer data, and then they're the ones remarketing to it.
Right. So as an entrepreneur, I'm always curious to hear the process that other entrepreneurs have. So how have you gone about getting customer validation or even customer insights? It sounds like you're great at observing and listening to see where problems and pain points are and how to come up with solutions to those. So how have you gone about with Golf Pay and with version 2.0 to get the feedback loop from customers already to improve and see what works and what doesn't and where the real value is for Golf Pay beyond the world of a hot deal, as you put it?
Well, that's an excellent point, and probably one of the things behind the scenes that is probably the most critical to what we do. So because our platform has conversational commerce, in other words, when you're doing a business, let's say through a text message with a particular golf course client of ours, we actually take all of that conversational data. They might send in questions to our system, so we actually automatically respond. It's something I didn't really touch on earlier, but So during this conversation with our system, we know exactly what they're interested, when they're interested in it, when they check prices and they actually abandon that process. So we monitor every single session with software that we created that will clearly let us improve the experience. It's something that's very incremental. Some parts of it are actually manual until we learn how to build what we need to build to automate it. So the longer a course is actually onboarded with us, the system just sort of learns by itself.
Got it. So you have the machine learning aspect to what you have there.
Correct.
Good stuff. So I know you love exploring the customer experience. So with that, can you walk us through, let's say with myself, I'm not onboarded yet. Say I don't really know too much about GolfPay, but I'm very interested. So walk myself as a persona here, how I would walk through the GolfPay journey and experience.
Just the same way you would now. So let's say you're not sure where you want to play. You Google search golf courses near me. Let's use that as one path. So we embed phone numbers within these different Google searches with the approval of the golf course. And when you make contact with the course with one of these phone numbers, we automatically engage the golfer by a text message. They have to give permissions, but there's a whole engagement process to that phone call. So that is one way through a phone call. You could send a text message to that same number. And you can do that, let's say, with directions that might be provided on the golf course website. We have web chat technology that just sits on the golf course website. So as the golfer finally arrives there, they see that as an option to do business. So we take where golfers are doing business already on their mobile phone, and we just create that experience in these different channels that they already use, whether it be calling, texting, chatting, Facebook Messenger, or what have you.
Got it. Okay. Yeah, good stuff. I'm just looking at some of the stats you have here, just as far as the traction and growth you've had from 2018 and 2019. And I have to say, congratulations. You've obviously found product market fit with GolfPay version 2.0. I'm seeing here even some of the numbers here, 42% increase in terms of the ratio of reservations to mobile check-ins 2018 and 2019, and other stats you can certainly talk about. So can you let us know about that traction? And like, how many golf courses across the US are you in now? Where are you finding the most positive reception for GolfPay? And yeah, just tell us a little bit about the traction and the growth that you have experienced and that you're looking at for 2019 and beyond.
So we have a little over 150 golf courses we do business with, whether it be version one, version two, or some aspect of GolfPay that they might be using. Looking at down the road when it comes to predicting how many courses we're going to be in next year, for better or for worse, I've always been the type that really doesn't get into projections. I do all my projections before I start the business. I put my projections together of what I think the market potential is, how much of the market I think I can get. And I don't really put numbers on it because I usually beat the numbers. You know, what I try to do is put my hard hat on every day, work really hard on improving the customer experience, customer support for our golf course customers, onboarding, how we do business, and on down the line. So I just continually look at it from a day at a time perspective. But so you've got to look into, okay, are we making money or losing money? And if we're losing money, how long can we lose money? So when I look at growing GolfPay, I also look at potential partnerships. But most of the courses, they actually reach out to us when they're ready to do business. We don't have a big sales staff. We work through a lot of different partnerships to help grow GolfPay, and that's worked out really well for us.
Nice. So you touched on partnerships there. If we can expand on that a bit, because that, as you very well know, with yourself as an entrepreneur and the success you've had, as they say, if you want to go fast, go alone. But if you want to go far, you got to go together. So how are you seeing now that GolfPay is maturing and it's in market and awareness has been raised? What partnerships that you can tell us about that are either in the works or ones that you already have that allow you to scale up even faster?
Well, I think we'll be making some pretty big announcements over the next few months. Most of our relationships have been through value-added resellers. They're not big companies, but they just help grow our customer base. We're working with a number of management companies as well. Brown is one of them, Brown Golf Management as well, and doing some testing. It's working out really good for their courses. And then I hesitate bringing up too many names just because it's a very political industry, as you know.
Of course.
Everybody's got their own little thing going on in their own business. So try to be very careful unless they decide they want to talk about it.
Yes.
You know, we definitely have some big players that we're working with. We want to keep it that way.
Absolutely. So hey, I got to flip the script on you a little bit here. So we've talked about things that have worked. worked in success. I know as an entrepreneur, you and I had a conversation a little bit about this before we started here about failure and what that really means as an entrepreneur. It really means that you have to learn something from that and try something differently. Could you share with us, because I know as an entrepreneur, you got to be a bit vulnerable sometimes and just kind of put it out there, the things that didn't work. Is there something with GolfPay early on that you thought for sure you assume was going to work and then realized, no, that didn't quite resonate or that it didn't quite hit the mark, and then you had to forget about that or reduce that aspect and move on to something else? Is there something you tried that you thought would work that didn't quite and you moved on from there?
Well, yeah, definitely. I would say if there was one pivot point, it was from version one to version two. So version two came about from all the experiences we got from version one. So when we started out, we start rolling out these hardware devices. They're like little kiosks. So golfers could actually check in using these kiosks. And we found that to be something that was just difficult and expensive to get golf courses to use.
Right.
We turned everything that needed to be done. We've automated it. And then we provided apps for staff to put on their mobile phones so they can do what they need to do with GolfPay from pretty much any device, anywhere, with or without an internet connection or a specific type of device.
Got it. So I had to experience and experiment with the kiosk to realize that it didn't work. And as an entrepreneur, sometimes you have to do that. You have to figure out what does work. You have to experiment and learn what does not first. It sounds like you've certainly done that.
Well, what's really interesting is the experiences that we gained. You know, we can see other companies trying it.
Right.
And maybe they'll be more successful at it than us. It wasn't a hard decision for us to flip the script on that, to use your terminology, to what ended up being part of what version two is all about.
Yes. And it sounds like you and I have talked about this as far as lean startup and those lean startup methodologies. Rather than trying to build the perfect app or the perfect product and before you actually test it and put it out in market, the worst thing you can do, as you know, Dale, is create something on time, on budget that nobody wants. So it sounds like you really embrace that lean startup methodology of minimum viable product, try a couple of things and get it out in market and test it and get some feedback on that. So I'm assuming that is something that you apply?
Yeah, and I keep my hands on it. I mean, I keep every finger on the pulse of everything. It's the only way I've ever operated, so I really don't know. Maybe there's a better way, but it's the only way I know. And I've become pretty good at it, so I can just stick with my process, and I'm sure a lot of people do it the same way.
Yeah, well, it sounds like you have a formula, an entrepreneurial recipe that's worked in many different market sectors and industries. So yes, why would you not apply that to what you're doing? So with that, hey, we do have a lot of entrepreneurs and budding entrepreneurs, aspiring entrepreneurs that listen to the Mod Golf podcast. So as an experienced entrepreneur, could you perhaps give some advice, maybe a couple of tips, cautionary tales, entrepreneurial hacks and suggestions you can make to people that are starting as far as do's and don'ts as they explore getting a product in market, whether it's in the golf industry or even something else?
Well, I would just say if you don't know the market that you're going to be going into business, at least from one side of the equation, if it's a consumer product, really from the consumer standpoint, it's from a business standpoint, from that perspective. And honestly, I've never really taken that particular approach. I've always got into new things, regardless if it's something you've had a lot of experience in around or not. Definitely vet it, vet your idea.
Right.
Spend some money even before you roll out to bounce it off of experts, do polls, get market studies done. I do all those in addition to my own very intense due diligence on something. Like for GolfPay, for example, I spent over a year, close to $50,000, just getting to the point of making a decision. This is definitely something that we're going to do, and this is the way we're going to do it. That's a big investment just to decide whether you're going to do it or not. You figure you're pretty darn sure that you're going to get there, but not 100%. And of course, you don't keep throwing money at something if you don't think it's going to pay off. But that helped to guide my decision making on product features and things like that. You know, and you have to be committed. That's whatever hours you have in a day and invest that into what you're doing. So that would be my main advice.
That's some great pieces of advice there. So yeah, know your market and certainly test it and research it beforehand, because As you very well know, Dale, there's nothing worse than someone creating a solution that's looking for a problem or looking for a market.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of those. A lot of those.
Oh, there are.
And clever ideas to go with it. But sometimes people fall in love with their idea and they forget.
I've seen that too. And I'm sure you've seen it on shows like Shark Tank and investors pleading them to please stop. It's like, no, I just got to find the right market. People just don't quite get it yet. It's like, oh my goodness. No. please stop. They almost want to pay them to stop, right? If we'll give you money if you will no longer do this thing.
Yeah, and usually those folks, they learn from that or they go back to doing what they did. So that's definitely an interesting and even experienced entrepreneurs fall into the trap of falling in love with what they're doing. And then they just forget there's so many other aspects of running a business.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, those are some great tips for aspiring entrepreneurs. So thanks for that. So, hey, to finish up here, I know you're all about the future of golf and how Golf Pay and the other things that you're working on can make it a better experience. So where do you see, say, look at with Golf Pay and even just beyond, what do you see looking into a crystal ball of the future of golf? And let's say even the experience for recreational golfers and for golf courses, let's say 5 or even 10 or 15 years from now, where do you see Golf Pay version 5.0 being and how that's going to help the market?
Wow. You know, I don't know. Quite honestly, I think technology, as far as how you're communicating and doing business, that's going to continue to evolve. I mean, the final frontier is, I don't know about golf in particular, but it's like VR, right? Voice commerce is really big. We're actually working on some voice commerce projects right now.
Yeah.
To add those channels. They're not easy things to build in. There's a lot that goes into it. The voice commerce, like with Alexa, doing things just through voice is big. Messaging, and those are the things that we're already doing. In fact, our patents we filed cover those areas. But as far as the industry itself and the product itself of the golf course, that product is in the middle of a quandary. You got Top Golf and you have entertainment venues that are springing up that's really taking away from people's time that they could be spending on the golf course. So I think that's probably a better question for other people in this space, but I just try to take care of the communication side. But I do, you know, obviously Top Golf has had a huge impact on the space and how people look at different opportunities that might be presented through like simulators, things like that.
Got it. I find it interesting your take on off-course experiences like Top Golf, because right now we got about 20 million recreational golfers in the U.S., give or take, over 15,000 golf courses. And a lot of people look at something like Top Golf and some of those other off-course experiences as actually growing the game or actually bringing in non-golfers or non-golf customers and with the potential of getting them through the funnel rather than cannibalizing and getting people off the golf course. Sounds like you see it maybe that people are doing golf experiences like Top Golf instead of playing 18 holes of golf.
I think just the entertainment venues in general, where customer experience is big, that takes less time, things like Top Golf, I think that's just the natural evolution of what our culture is moving us toward because of time constraints. Obviously, golf is going to be around hopefully forever, but it's definitely going to evolve. You know, as real estate gets more expensive, as people want to spend less time at one particular activity. I mean, the inevitability of that, I think anybody could see that if they took the time to think about it. But I don't know. It's hard to say how golf courses are going to be impacted. I think they'll definitely need to get it to evolve how people do business with them, at least make it much easier. There's some golf courses, for example, they might have, if you go to their website, you see all these different distractions when really 90% of the people are going to the website just to book a tee time, but yet you can't hardly find where on the website you book a tee time. So those things are really undervalued in how you keep golfers engaged. And I think there's a lot can be done by just making it easier to do business that will help shape those behaviors. I think a lot could be done. And then adding things like a Top Golf type situation at a golf course, there's different types of things people are doing out there, like Top Tracer, which is a Top Golf company where you can set up Top Tracer in terms of a range or as an alternative to a range. I think that's really cool stuff. I think those are the kind of things that are going to be big in the future at golf courses.
I agree. I find it interesting with Drive Shack, which is the up-and-coming competitor for Topgolf. One of their advantages, the bit I know about them, is they are owned by American Golf Company, who owns, I think, over 300 golf courses in the U.S. So for them, they've got real estate, so they can start combining what they're doing in the golf entertainment space on the golf course, whereas Topgolf seems to have the issue of trying to get some real estate. So very interesting things happening in those spaces. But just to finish up, to get back to make it all about you here, Dale, and make it about golf pay. One thing I love is, and you obviously understand this implicitly, that of the 6 or 7 steps or touch points across the experiential journey for a round of golf for a player, that the actual playing the round of golf, those 4 or 5 hours, is only one of them. Whereas the onboarding beforehand, coming into the clubhouse, what happens before, and then afterwards, as far as being able to stick around and enjoy food and beverage with your friends, and then the experience of going home, and then the follow-up of that. So it sounds like Golf Pay is nicely aligned to touch all 6 or 7 of those touch points, not just the round of golf itself. Is that fair to say?
Oh, very fair to say. It's definitely something we put a big focus on. It's not just what happens at the course, but we want to stay in touch with the golfer before, during, and after the round, and then even create some opportunities that are more responsive from a machine learning standpoint that can help to even optimize that experience from before, during, and after the round. It's very interesting. A lot of fun. I think the software companies out there that we integrate with, we try to stay agnostic. Some of them are not very open. So I think that becomes an impediment to what the golf courses really need into the future. But I see some companies that are really playing an integral part of that openness. And then I think those are the companies that will start gaining more traction in the next few years.
Completely agree. And I have a feeling One Name Golf Pay is nicely aligned to do just that.
I hope so. That's the plan.
So Dale, thanks for all the insights today that you provided on customer experience and what you've done in the entrepreneurial space. So before I let you go here to get back to doing what you do, why don't you tell our listeners where they can experience Golf Pay, where they can download it, where they can find out more information with what you do?
Well, you can go to any participating golf course that's on our platform. So you can go to golfpay.co, play one of those courses and experience everything end to end. Or if you happen to be going to any of those courses' websites, you can find us on those websites as well, not just from that platform, but also on the individual websites. You'll be able to see references to onboarding Golf Pay from the websites, like through web chat and things like that.
Got it. So I will make sure in the show notes, as I always do, I will include the links to Golf Pay and some other background information so our listeners can learn about all the good things you are doing in this space. I know it's taken us a year and a half to make this episode, this conversation happen, but all the interesting things that you're doing in the golf innovation space, I've got a feeling, Dale, that you and I hopefully won't be another year and a half, but I'm going to have you on as a follow-up for another podcast episode a year or so, just to get an update on all the great things you're doing with Golf Pay and beyond. So, hey, thanks for joining me today on the Mod Golf Podcast, and I hope to talk to you again very soon.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate it.
So that's a wrap for this episode of the Mod Golf Podcast. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Dale Merritt, founder and CEO of Golf Pay, about customer experience and how, through service design and technology, course operators can acquire, engage, and retain more golfers. I'd love to hear what you found interesting and useful in this episode. So please share your thoughts by emailing me at colin@modgolfpodcast.com, and I promise to get back to you. If you'd like to learn more about the work Dale passionately takes on to support the golf industry and grow recreational participation, go to our episode show page, where we've included links and photos to provide you with additional content. I'd like to extend my gratitude and thanks to our sponsor partners, British Columbia Golf and NextLinks, for helping make the Mod Golf Podcast happen. I also want to send a big welcome to our newest sponsor partner, Golf Genius Software. Without their support, I wouldn't be able to bring you these engaging stories from the golf industry's brightest innovators and influencers. Are you a golf course owner or operator struggling with the complexities of running tournaments? Do you want to spend less time running them while increasing revenue and profit margins? Check out our friends at Golf Genius to learn how they can help make the magic happen at golfgenius.com. If you enjoyed this conversation about entrepreneurship in the golf industry, you can find more of our innovation stories on previous episodes at mod.golf or search Mod Golf Podcast on iTunes. And please rate, review, and subscribe to the show while you're there. I'm your host, Colin Weston. Thanks so much for joining me. Bye for now.